with this little thing, it's sufficient.
It's very good quality.
Oh.
Yes. Good things come in small packages.
Yes.
Yeah.
Like I said, it is a very small radio, and
yes,
it's the best one to have the BBC.
Yes.
From here.
Yes.
Can you imagine?
Yes. Sure. Yeah.
Yes. Japanese. Sony, too.
It is Sony. It's called a Walkman Professional.
Oh, Walkman Professional.
Yeah. Stereo. That's very fine. So, if I can get you as close to this microphone as it's possible without being uncomfortable.
Yes.
Yeah, and that's a German microphone.
Well, it's the best.
It's very good for the interviews, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
It's got a nice warm quality.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, it's nice.
Because the microphone has also its importance. It's not only this.
That's it.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, this shapes the sound of it.
Because there is a microphone which goes with this.
It's not nearly good enough.
Uh-huh.
No. So that's what
it is. Professional, yes. Okay.
I want to quote something you said and then ask you a little bit about it.
Yes.
If you don't mind me quoting you.
Of course, yes. I am responsible of what I say.
We speak of revitalizing monuments, but we must first rehabilitate our tradition of thinking. We are cut off from our classical Islamic traditions. Can we discuss that for a few moments?
Yes.
To what extent is the present generation cut off from its Islamic traditions?
Yes. Yes, this is, for me, as a historian of Islamic thought, the main point to be examined, discussed, especially when we speak about the built environment, but also when we speak about religion. Because what has happened in the history of Islamic thought and the history of Muslim societies in general is this phenomenon which I call a rupture. And this concept of rupture means that there has been discontinuities in the historical evolution of all societies where Islam played a major role in shaping the political institutions, the legal system, urbanism, architecture, all levels of life, ethical system of values. There has been, if we look chronologically to this evolution, there has been a period which is presented as the classical period of Islamic culture and civilization. And this period starts from the beginning, let's say in Damascus, without going back to the beginning of Islam, because Damascus has been the first center where Islam as a new religion met other cultures which existed before in Syria and in all Middle East. And there many cultures exchanged their respective traditions, values, intellectual way of thinking, etc. And this gave rise to what we call Islamic thought and Islamic culture, and continued, of course, in Baghdad on a larger scale. And this lasted until 12th, 13th century, at least when we speak about Islam in the Mediterranean area, because the core of this civilization is related to Mediterranean area, which means that it is related to all Mediterranean cultures, Christian, Judaic, but also ancient culture like Pharaonic culture in Egypt, like Syriac culture in Palestine and Syria, Iranian culture. And Iranian culture is so tremendously important and had such a place in this new culture which emerged in Baghdad, in Iran, the cities of Iran, the cities of Iraq, Syria, etc., and spread until Spain. So up to the 13th century, this period from, let's say, the 8th century until 13th century, we have really a culture which played a major role in the integration of society. There is a book written by Montgomery Watt. He's well known in our studies. The title of the book is Islam and the Integration of the Society. Integration of the society means that all levels of life of people in the society work together and are raised together, interrelated to each other. The, for example, the way to build, the way to dress, the way to cook, music, etc., all levels, legal system, like I told, was always in evolution, because there was people who were always thinking to adapt law to the changing circumstances, which is life. This is the integrating movement in history, in societies where all was raised up. And this is due, of course, not only to the dynamism of this culture, where many ethnic groups, many languages, many cultures met and exchanged. It's due also to the wealth which existed in that time in Muslim societies, because there has been long routes for trade. Like here we speak, we hear here speaking about the Silk Route going to China and coming until here and going until North Africa, Spain, and even reaching Europe. So you see, there has been a class of merchants, rich merchants, who had the possibility to develop a kind of international overseas trade, which is of course a source of wealth. That's why it was possible to build these wonderful monuments, which we see here, but also in all parts of Muslim world in that classical age. So you see, the point here is that there is an interaction between economy, culture, intellectual life, religious and spiritual life. Spirituality in that time was extremely dynamic. We have high-level personalities who developed spirituality, starting from the meditation of the Quranic text, but not sticking to the literal text, but having a free creativity, like, for example, Hallaj or Ibn Arabi in Spain. They wrote such rich and wonderful creative books that even today, scholars are not yet ready to interpret and to have all the richness understood, which is included in these books. For example, to study the creative imagination through the work of Ibn Arabi. Here is a subject. You need many scholars to exploit many volumes read just through a free imagination, reading the Quranic text and expanding it tremendously in all horizons, just like this, what we saw in architecture. You see this? This is the fact, the historical fact. Now, after 13th century, many events will happen, historical events, inside the societies, as well as outside the societies. Outside the societies, of course, I cannot give a course, but I can mention one date, which is symbolic, of course. It's not just this date which from which starts the what I call the rupture. It's the date when Mongols conquered Baghdad, which was during 5 centuries the capital of the Islamic Empire, and settled there and abolished the political institution called the Caliphate. So you see how symbolic it is and how important it is. The Caliphate, which represented symbolically and politically the political system on which all Islamic city has been based, the system to legitimize political power, was linked to the institution of the Caliphate. This has been destroyed, and the Caliphate has been totally abolished, which means that the political center disappeared, and then we shall have many political centers. It was in 1258. That's why we have here in Central Asia this new dynasty which started and which did what they did independently from what existed in the Middle East previously in the Classical Age. But what has been done here didn't touch the other part of Muslim societies, which had their own evolution, because the evolution of Muslim societies, and especially what we can call Arab Islam, Islam expressed in Arabic language and linked to the Arabic tradition. And by the way, all classical Islam, which I mentioned now, all what has been done and achieved during this period in all levels, sciences, philosophy, theology, law, everything, and even architecture, was expressed in Arabic language. All. And Arabic language during all this time has been the intellectual, scientific language for all the civilized countries, including Europe in that time.
How widespread?
Because Europe had to translate many books of medicine, of sciences, astronomy, mathematics, geography, of course philosophy mainly, through Arabic in Spain especially, and it went to Oxford, and it went to the Sorbonne, and it went to Bologna, and it expanded after 12th, 13th century. Because the big phenomena, historical phenomena, is precisely the start of the European hegemony in the Mediterranean area. European hegemony will replace the Islamic hegemony up to 13th century. The Crusades started in 11th already, which means that already there is an emergence of political economic forces in Europe, and the Reconquista in Spain started also in 11th century to expel Muslims from Spain, and they will be expelled definitely in 1520. And Jews of Spain have been expelled in 1492, which we are celebrating for Europe, but which we are commemorating. These are two things we have to put in the memory of people. We are in 1992. It's the fifth 100th anniversary of the what we call the discovery of America. 1492. The discovery of America is a major date which will deepen the rupture, the historical rupture, which started already in 13th century. Why that? Because as we know now, the discovery of America is the discovery of the Atlantic route for Europe. And it is the beginning of a new expansion of Europe, of new possibilities to exercise hegemony, not only on Mediterranean area, in which Byzantine forces competed with Islamic forces, and then European forces will compete after 13th century with Islamic forces, but now Europe will have all American continent. And then Islam will come down, 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 until 19th century. And in 19th century, the hegemony was not only the control of the great routes for trade, which are the source of the wealth. It was for Islam, now it will be for Europe exclusively. In the beginning of 19th century, 1799, Napoleon Bonaparte, French, will debark in Alexandria to conquer Egypt. Third rupture, which will deepen again, or the destructuring process, which started already, as I said, in 11th, 13th century, and has been aggravated, as I say, period after period, because after the beginning of 19th century, it was colonialism. Colonialism is not only the competition, as I said, for the trade, but it is the, you say, the confiscation of sovereignty, the abolition of
the abolition of
people sovereignty, or of all any political sovereignty in many Muslim countries. Algeria is conquered in 1830. It belonged to France. India has been conquered by England in 1768 or 67, I don't remember. And all other Muslim societies will be under control, political control, economic control, cultural control of the European powers. But you see that the historical process of discontinuity to relate to the classical period for Muslims has been an ongoing process. If I may say, there is a continuity to produce discontinuities. And on the contrary, for Europe, there is a continuity in the expansion of the hegemony. Never Europe stopped to go ahead and ahead and ahead, upper and upper and upper, until today. And what we see now, if we look to the map, the geopolitical map of the what we call Islamic world, we see all societies which all, without exception, went through this process. Even Turkey, which had at a moment in 16th and 17th century the possibility to resist to the European hegemony with the Ottoman Empire, and they did. They resisted in Mediterranean. They occupied Algeria, they occupied Tunisia, Libya, Egypt, Syria, Iraq, Arabia, all. They took over Ottoman Empire. They took over all the Muslim Mediterranean societies, and they tried to reactivate what we call the Islamic civilization. But they did never reactivate all the levels of Islamic civilization, like the caliphate, the classical caliphate, did in the classical period. Why? Because they did what Russians, the Soviet Union, communist Russia, did I mean that they gave all their attention to strengthen the military power.
If you could find him at some point, then
get
him to.
I found him once already, and then I thought he was up here again.
Yeah.
He knows.
I didn't know a lot of this detail before. It's fascinating.
Of course,
yes.
This is history.
Yes.
When people do not know history, they develop their imaginary. They have images about life and about people, and these images push them to hate people. Now you can understand why Muslim intellectuals have been frustrated. They could not enjoy the freedom to think, the freedom to write, the freedom to publish, the freedom to have associations, clubs, the freedom to be a citizen, according to their conception, modern conception, of exercising their responsibilities in the new nation, and to go through the promise made that after the independence we shall be free to do all this. And this you can control all over the Muslim world. Up to now, the day we are speaking, these freedoms almost do not exist yet. We started to have some freedom after the collapse of Soviet Union. Because then the play between Soviet Union as a support for this ideology of a nation state, or on the free world like Saudi Arabia and others, for obvious reasons. You see the political options for this world or the other. How many states played on the possibility to make a kind of balance between the two. And the consequences of this game, the ideological game, on the freedom of citizens in Muslim societies. So we didn't enjoy this freedom. And here is a Muslim guide who is just a spiritual guide. He does not exercise any political responsibility. He doesn't have a state. He is related to his community just by this spiritual guidance. I mean the Aga Khan, of course, who had this absolutely wonderful, I would say even genius idea, to tackle this difficult situation created by the independences in all Muslim societies through a subject to which no ideology pointed out, which makes you away from the ideological debate between the free world or the Soviet Union and all this struggle which we know. He said, let's look to Muslim societies through architecture. But of course he is well informed about the situation I described. And we discovered how this idea is absolutely unique to go deep through all the new problems, the new difficulties accumulated in Muslim societies since the 50s, all the obstacles, to go through it without touching 1 minute to the ideological debate, and to tackle real concrete problems about the environment, the built environment. And I had the privilege to be, from the beginning, engaged in this process. Me, as an Algerian, who experienced all this evolution with the big aspiration to freedom in the 50s, I was a student with many Algerians, many North Africans, Maghreb, and afterwards experiencing the lack of this freedom. And I find this liberating space where you can speak freely and you can tackle a real burning issues through art, history, culture, urbanism, all these issues which are related to architecture. And we discovered how architecture is, as I call it, a totalizing activity in human existence. That's why I say it is a genius idea to say, let's look to Muslim societies and let's look how to modernize Muslim societies through architecture, not through politics. We leave politics to politicians. And look what has happened. That's why I called it, this is a space of freedom for more freedom and for true freedom, if I have to complete to complete the expression and the definition. This is the meaning.
Thank you.
And it's a...
I like that very much.
Oh, yes, it's because I went through. It's my life. It's yes, that's why when I speak about this, it's all the energy of conviction and a personal commitment.
One final question.
Yes, because I want to hear the result of the referendum.
Yes,
it will come.
Today.
Ah, yes.
That's today.
You forgot it. You are not. You are far.
Yes.
Me. It's related to this.
Yes, it is.
What we are speaking.
What's
I am engaged for Europe, for the unification of Europe, because there is a big, a great hope to change precisely all the present situation in which Muslim societies are suffering since 30 years or 40 years when they started their independence. Because after the independence, they have been always face to face with different states, and they developed relationships with different states on the basis of purely economic exchange, regardless to all the issues on which we are speaking. If Europe is successful, this face-to-face between states will disappear. It will be a new space of confrontation. Of course, European states and people also, do not look to this as I am saying, because they don't know. It's not their problem.
One final question. and it's to get a viewpoint from a different time and a different religion, but what kind of resonance it makes to you. You know, Balthasar Neumann, the Rococo architect, he designed Kirche an der Wies in Bavaria, these beautiful, almost decadent interiors of these great churches of the 18th century.
Yes.
His group, one from his group, a friend of his, said this quote that I'm going to give you. It's not Balthasar Neumann who said it, but it was a friend of Neumann, so I presume that Neumann was in accord with it. I know that God cannot at all live without me. If I am destroyed, it will be necessary for him to die. What?
Yes.
Does that trigger in your
yes.
mind?
Yes. It figures a lot of things. Because as you know, in French thinking already, as well as in German thinking, we have developed already the idea that God is dead. And in France, we have Michel Foucault, the well-known philosopher, who added to this expression that man is dead, which is even more frappant, more, it has more impact on thinking to say what does this mean, man is dead, because man dies after we have said that God is dead. What you say, for example, has been written when?
Around
1750. Mm-hmm. Yes, you see, it's a long time ago. Nobody said man is dead.
No.
We started to say man is dead in the 60s. And Michel Foucault has developed this idea that man is dead. It's a very, very important sentence. Now, to come back to your sentence, this is the whole issue of the philosophical definition of knowledge. How we as human beings come to say I know. What do we know, and what's the process which leads us and allows us to say I know that God exists, for example. We had during centuries revelations, to speak only on the cultural area commanded by monotheism, because here it's a big issue. If I start I should not finish. Yes, because when we speak about this is the philosophical level of knowledge, and you cannot speak on this without approaching this issue historically and anthropologically. You see, I am obliged to stop, because if we say God exists, we say it in our monotheist tradition, and the monotheist tradition is particular to the geographical area stretching from Iran to the Atlantic Ocean. To the Pacific Ocean, of course, it includes America, because America has been discovered after, and they killed what existed before. But for a historian and for an anthropologist, it exists. So we have to refer to the Aztec civilization, to the Mexican civilization, to the Indian civilization, as we have to relate also to refer to Buddhist tradition of thinking, to Shinto tradition of thinking, Hindu tradition of thinking. Why speaking all the time about us, that God is dead or not dead? This is a small piece of the issue. And today we cannot think like this anymore. We have not the right. You see, you ask me as a Muslim to give you an answer as a Muslim, it's too complicated. And Muslims, by the way, who are now prisoners of this so-called fundamentalism. This fundamentalism is the product, the political product of the evolution imposed by the nation, the state-nation party, which I mentioned. It's not at all the product of Islam. This is the imaginary built by Europeans about Islam. I refuse this radically, totally. It has nothing to do with Islamic thought, because Islamic thought, you have a historian of religion called Shahrastani, who wrote a book on history of religion, absolutely open to all religions. 11th, 12th century. Shahrastani. And the book can be studied, it is studied and translated into French. It is a wonderful book. Why then people who were Muslims, they were open like this, and now we have fundamentalism? It comes from Islam? It cannot come from Islam, because Islam gives you Shahrastani, and he gives you Maududi now, or Abbasi Madani now. This is the product of history, not of Islam as a religion. This I mean. So this question of God cannot be tackled only in the small space of our monotheism and our Greek philosophical tradition. It's not sufficient. I cannot accept it, and no scholar would accept it if the scholar himself, it depends, if the scholar himself is trained in religious anthropology, in cultural anthropology. And I can tell you, I know my colleagues, the majority of them are not trained at all to answer like I do. And I answer like I do because I have been myself pressed by the necessity to give always explanations and justifications and legitimations to people in Europe who ask me questions like you ask me now. You see the pressure. So I had to find answers which are beyond the current answers given currently by Muslims who are not, of course, acquainted with religious anthropology or cultural anthropology. But I want to engage a discussion with my colleagues on the academic level who come with great arrogance to say themselves as scholars, Islam is such, Islam is such, Islam is such. I say, no, please, you are a scholar. So this question of God, again, I come to it, it goes beyond the Islamic case, beyond the Christian case, beyond the Jewish case, and we cannot deal correctly with the two sentences, God is dead, man is dead, without coming to this new space of thinking. Here is another space, which is a space of freedom, of course, first, we have to have freedom to think, but we have the need to come to a new space of thinking, of looking to the issues of God, of man, of knowledge, beyond the philosophical tradition which we teach in Oxford, Cambridge, Los Angeles, Berkeley, Harvard, I mentioned the biggest universities, you know, where the knowledge is produced and controlled. We cannot speak like this. And of course, Islam, the position of Muslims, has to be included, and it needs to come to this new space of thinking. We cannot stay apart, like the fundamentalists say. And this is the whole history of religions, which is badly taught in our universities, and the whole history of cultures as a framework in which each people, each group of people, is bound to think according to the tradition built in that language. You see, another problem. We have to, we have to come out of the tradition imposed of each language on the people speaking this language, and to think in another framework, which would be meta-linguistic space of thinking, meta, beyond. You see? So all these issues are needed to give a relevant answer to this question. Yes. And I have an answer, but I think you cannot develop it here.
Yeah, no, it's fantastic. Good.
And this we are trying to do in the space created by the Aga Khan. I would like to add this because I believe in this. Created by the Aga Khan through architecture. Through architecture we can meet such questions which you raised. This is my contention. And I try always to demonstrate it. In all opportunities. Today I had not the opportunity, the discussion has been too technical, too focused on techniques and very far away from such issues, but of course we have seminars where we have the opportunity to touch to this.
I know that. Yes. Mm-hmm. Thank you so much. That's fantastic.
Yes.
Good.
But